My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
But you know, we grew up on the music, man, and our guest today, Bounty Killer.
Legend.
One of the most iconic performers, legendary.
Bounty Killer. There we go. He wasn't going to do it. I could do it for him.
Correction. So, you know, we grew up listening to so much music.
Yeah.
So when we came here to interview Usain Bolt, that was iconic within itself.
Right.
He's one of the greatest athletes of all time. And shout out to our guy, Alex Good Energy, and shout out to Safari. They put it together.
Trent.
They're like, yo, you want to interview?
Trent. Oh, I said it wrong.
Trent.
There it is.
Trent. Not
street. I've been
tripped.
Get it right.
The boss is saying. The boss is spoken.
Yeah. Tripped.
So they
tripped.
They set it up. So shout out to the whole team and shout out to Donnie Kendall for being extremely generous with his time. Within a day notice, they agreed to doing it. And we right here. And shout out to Screechies.
Screechy. Screechy
Don. Best seafood.
Well, you know, Safari's my brother. I'm a huge supporter.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's always rooting for me. So, you know. And then he knows the old connection of you and the music and growing up, so you know how much it meant. So he reached out to me, and then I saw Baby Sham last night.
That's
what they was doing in the day. So he just came one full circle. It's a perfect thing to do.
My family this was what we thought. It. How more legendary could this trip be? We up to the notch.
Yeah,
we just up to the notch.
That's a fact. So thank you for joining us, bro. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and I'm happy to be here
representing
for the music and the culture.
Appreciate it. So let's jump into this. So you call yourself the poor people's governor. What makes you champion that? Like, what makes you take that title on?
Well, I'm a poor person child. My parents came from humble beginning. I'm from the ghetto as well. Just like all these struggling kids you saw out here, I was one of them on the road. Not knowing where the next meal coming from. So I lived that life of the poor people. So when I came through and I started off, it was really singing about when I was a youth, I lived down the gully. I used to wear a pants, could I see my body, enough girl pass and laugh off of me. So I was singing about my struggle. And then when I reached to the studio and I said, down the gully and them suffering, they never want to hear that. So when I said, the whole place mash up. So I thought that was the thing to sing about, you know? People dead and bullet and copper shot and all these things. So till I burst now, and the other cultural artists like Garnet Silk and Luciana, they was denouncing the gun songs. They was trying to get the nation to sing more cultural music. So they said they're not sharing stage with the man who endorsing gun music. And I know that this wasn't really exactly what I learned to do in music. The first set of music I was singing about was roots and culture and the suffering and the poverty. So I just go back and said, okay, they say they want roots, reality, and culture. Roots, reality, and culture. Long time me of it, but the world does sucks. And then I start to say, the Lord is my light, my salvation. Mama, she's not in a good mood. And then I did one named Poor People Fed Up. So when I did that one, that was like one of my first real monstrous social commentary. Had like don't know how to get to and all those before, but the Poor People Fed Up one, it was banned. So you know when they ban songs, it get more attention and cause controversy. So the song even get bigger. Because you can't ban music, you can't lock down music. Music is in the air. So it just made the song bigger. And in the intro now, I said, this is Rodney Price, Poor People Governor. It's just a term I termed to myself. This is Rodney Price, Poor People Governor. And fam, I said that in that song, 1995. The people kept calling me that. So it's a title that I took upon myself, but the people endorsed it. Is the people kept saying, Poor People Governor, Poor People Governor. And then now, I'm always involved in charities and helping back young artists and doing back things for the country and the people whenever I can, however I can. So the people see me as a champion for them.
Yeah.
And I love that idea of championing for the people, because the people is who made me. That's why I'm always in Jamaica, because I'm just this Jamaican who rooted in this country and in this culture, and I have to stay awake and watch over the people. because the people's struggle and plight is mine. So that's how the whole poor people governor thing sticks. And I kept singing, looking into my eyes, and anytime, and I continued to do social commentary, and I became a legend in that, singing for the people, the voice of the voiceless.
Born as a sufferer.
Born as a sufferer, all of those music, yeah, the ghetto dictionary. So that's what made them a poor people governor.
We see a lot of poverty, unfortunately, in Jamaica and a lot of different islands. What do you think can be some solutions to raise people out of poverty and not have so much poverty, which leads to violence, which leads to all the other different things?
Well, I think most of the countries, they are trying to build from the top. And you can't build a house from the roof. You gotta help the common man and the common woman. And I don't think the government trying to change their situation. They are trying to help their situation. It's like, you're trying to help me in the situation that I am, instead of trying to help me out. So they will assist you to go from one point to another in your situation, but they are not helping you to get out.
Get out of it, yeah.
So the people have to think of self-reliance, because there won't ever be a day when the government gonna look out for everybody that don't go like that. No, it never gonna be like that. And they have to have the unfortunate ones to make them think like they can help them to be fortunate. That's how politics work. When everybody get fortunate, fuck politics. I don't want to hear from politicians. I got my house, my land, my car, my job, my family. But when you don't have all of these things, they come and say, fundamentally, I can give you hope. And I can, and then through your fucking situation, you listen. I used to listen. No, I have no fucking interest. But when I was in the situation like the other people and the suffering ones, I used to listen and I used to believe that might be there, could be hope. And now I can see there won't be no fucking hope coming from those people. Because their job is to make you feel like there will be hope, but they're not bringing no hope.
Yeah.
And that is for the hopeless. When there is no hopeless, they have nobody to ply on and to trick and fool. So they need poor people. So they create them. And they motivate and cultivate them.
Yeah.
And then if you are not smart enough to know that they are creating you to be like this, you would be stuck.
One of the things you said is that you're from Jamaica, you never left Jamaica. My family's from a generation where it was like, let's leave Jamaica and find success in America. You find now that more artists, more people of art, and even business men and women that have achieved success, they're staying here and try to uplift the island, develop the island more so?
Yeah, because back in the days, there weren't so much opportunity and Jamaica wasn't looking so developed. So most of the people used to migrate, even the artists. Right. When they got their first two hit songs, they migrate and go live overseas. Well, in the 90s, things started to change. Jamaica started to develop and tourism and most things started to get better. And we got great visiting capacity, and then we have big concerts, festivals, some fest and sting. We used to have everything in the 90s. We used to have some splash and some fest, both of them, plus sting. It used to be in Kingston, then it was in Montego Bay a few days after. They used to have Champion in Action, Fully Loaded. It used to have so much concerts, and Jamaica was booming in the 90s. So that's when I came up, so I never had no interest to leave. And then I was rooted with the people, and I see like abomination or a sellout if I should burst in Jamaica and then go live overseas. I don't like that idea. If there is a situation where I have to do it, then it's different. But for me, to just like, okay, America looking better now because I'm a superstar. No, I can't do that. And then the climate and the food and the culture and the freedom in Jamaica, I don't know about nowhere in the world. I don't want to go nowhere. I like this little place. Jamaica is a little paradise. I don't know if everybody discovered that, but for me, it seems like paradise.
Yeah, so when you're making the music in the early 90s, we grew up in the 90s.
Yeah.
When you're making the music, are you making it authentically for the dancehall crowd here, or are you getting pressure to say, you know what, I need to make a hit that can cross over internationally? You're making it authentically here.
When I was making music in the early 90s, when I'm just coming, it was rooted straight Jamaican talk and slang. I have no idea of what's going on overseas, because when I was growing up and learning music, there weren't no cable, there weren't no internet, and I never used to travel as a boy. And none of my family never used to travel. So I have no idea what's going on overseas. I'm authentically rooted in Jamaican culture and heritage. So everything I was saying was a straight for me and Jamaica. I never knew that the world was going to get aware of my music. I never even knew I was going to purse overseas. I was just trying to conquer Jamaica. The music gets out in the world and then fan base start to build, that's when I start to consider, well, you got to make the music global, make it things that relatable. And then now what I sing about is people struggle. And it's not only Jamaican struggle. People struggle all over. Banners are sufferer. It's not only Jamaican people suffer.
Yeah.
It's not only African people suffer. You understand?
Yeah.
Indians suffer, Chinese suffer, white people suffer. You have all type of people suffer. Maybe black people suffer more. But in every nation, there is some struggling people. So I kept singing about the things that people live. Banners are suffer down in the ghetto, poor people fed up. Look into my eyes. Tell me what you see. Can you feel my pain? Am I your enemy? You understand? So these things global. And I wasn't even thinking that the struggle is global. But after when I get aware that my fan base got bigger, I realize, okay, it's real. It's life.
Yeah, there's more people
life
living that.
Comes with struggle. Yeah. Only death is rest in peace. There is no live in peace. We live in struggle and ups and downs and trial and triumphs, and that's life. And if you don't want to go through nothing, just lie and die. But if you want life, well, you got to bear struggles.
Yeah.
And me think that struggle is strength, because the dominance that I have is my struggle make I can do it.
I endure. When I hear you talk, it makes me think of this line. I think it was Lupe Fiasco said, struggle, another son that God loves you. Like, yeah. He's going to put his trumpet's test.
He says,
for
suffer
his warriors.
The children to come unto me.
Yeah.
And that's all God knows when you're faithful. When you suffer, you don't curse him. And you still hold your faith, and you still keep your moral, and you still stand with all your convictions. Despite what you're going through, you are who you are. And that's a true gem. A gem is just a gem. And that's me. Despite what I've been through, I'm going to be me.
Yeah.
And I tell it as it is. And I have nothing else to say. Only the truth I can tell. Arash, shut my mouth.
So coming up, you know, in the street and getting into music, what was your education as far as learning the business? Because I feel like a lot of creatives, America, Jamaica, whatever, they're talented, but they don't understand the business. And it's a music business. Yeah. A lot of people get taken advantage of, get robbed. They don't have that money.
Yeah.
So how did you learn the business? What's your...
Well, we paid a lot, you know. You know, you have to pay to learn. Sometimes you have to even get burned to learn. So I got burned to learn. So
bad contract.
All of them stuff. We've been through all of that. Most of us been through that, especially we from the 90s. Because today now, we are more aware because we have internet and we have YouTube and we have Google, and we Google all these information. Back in the days, we never had access to those. And people never used to try to edify artists about the business part. They groom you to be a good artist, but not to be the businessman behind the artist. So I signed bad contracts before. I lost some of my publishing, all those things. But when I was coming up, I aware that all of that was going to happen. But what I think, I thought that I just want to bust. Despite what they took or take from me, after I burst, they can't take back me from the world. So it's just like I'm going to pay an extra due or extra fee, you know? So I pay like an extra percentage to get my break. But I wasn't worried about that because I know I was going to make it and I was going to stay. So I will recoup back all they took away from me one day. So it was really a rocky road. You understand? A lot of people mess up, never pay their dues, they never pay what rightfully mine. And I started to learn it. So it's when I started to manage myself. Because when I just came out, my first real management team was Spection. And that's with specialists. Shabba Rankin, Patra, Mad Cobra, Rich Stevens. Same management team that I went under. And I wasn't getting the attention that I felt I should get. And then the contract, as you say, was twisted. It had recording, publishing, management, everything tied up in one contract like a Bible. Mm. You can't chuck with stick like this. You understand?
Yeah, they're going to do that so you know nobody's going to read it all.
And then it even have power of attorney in it.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big breach.
Wow.
You understand?
Yeah.
And then, no, I never had an independent lawyer. They sent me to the company's lawyer.
Mm. Yeah.
So that was their lawyer, not my lawyer.
Mm.
So he was on their behalf, and all of that was forbidden. That was prohibited.
Yeah.
So I got out the contract easily.
Yeah.
So I left the company. So that was 1993 to 1994, 95. And then from 1995, I hadn't had official management. It was just me doing my thing. And then I had this woman named Louise Fraser Bennett. She passed away. May her soul rest in peace. Lovely lady who helped me, and she was the one who really first started to teach me about the business, Louise Fraser Bennett.
Mm.
So it was me independently managing myself and have people working for me as management, people who more experienced than what I never had a manager. So I was always getting little information about the business because I was taking care of my business, and then I started to bring up Scare Them Crew. 1995, 96, Scare Them Crew came on the scene also, so I had to start to look out for their career and my career, so it forced me to start taking up managerial process.
Yeah.
So that's how I started to learn more about the business, because I started to have careers in my hand, including myself.
Yeah.
And then Sharon Burke, me and Sharon Burke link up now, 1998. And then it was me, Sharon Burke, and Louise forming a little management team independently. People think that Louise was my manager. People think that Sharon was my manager, but they weren't really paid manager. They were acting as managers.
Mm.
But it's not like I was paying them as a manager. I was signing a contract as a manager. But we are close friends. We are like family. So they are a part of my team, so they play these roles.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So it was nothing officially, but it was what's happening. They were playing the management role because I never had an official manager.
Yeah.
And that was from 1995 until like 2016. It's like 4 years ago. Wow.
So you have a manager now?
Yeah. I officially apply a manager now. That's Paul Giscombe, Funky.
Yeah.
He is from Spectrum too. He was my first road manager when I went to Spectrum in 1993.
Yeah.
So he's very experienced, and then he knows me from I was a young star. He was the one who first started to groom me. The first time I went on a plane, he was the first one who signed up my farm and said, well, this is first class. He's like a mentor to me.
Yeah, the only way.
You understand? Yeah, so despite me and the company fall out back then, we still did have good relationships. We're still friends, because me and Specialist still friends. Me and Babsy was still friends, because it wasn't no animosity. It was just a case where this wasn't right and this wasn't done properly. So you know what? I'm going to book it. And then, no, I was kind of overshadowed by Shabba, Patra, Cobra, Richard Cena. All these people had big international success at the time.
Right.
I was on the merge, but I wasn't on the level as them. So, you know, I'm like a little fish in the water or something.
So, opening that.
Yeah, so I wasn't getting that full attention, and I was on the verge to merge.
Yeah.
So I needed that attention now to make my fucking mark.
Yeah.
You understand? And they wasn't seeing the wave coming. So it's when I leave 1994, 95, 96, and I put out the My Experience album. When I went to New York, Johnny Wonder, me and Johnny Wonder partner.
Yeah.
So it was me and Johnny Wonder and Louise Fraser Bennett and Sharon Burke, all of us together, have a little managerial team. Johnny Wonder became the head of it because he was more experienced in the distribution, and he got me a label deal with TVT Records. And between TVT and...
TVT, that's Little John?
No, that's
They had Little John label. Yeah, Little John was on the label. Yeah, that was the label who came out to Little John.
Yeah, Pitbull.
Yeah, all of them was on TVT, TVT Tunes,
That
was a big label.
That's interesting. Because you're saying 95, and I keep hearing 95, and I'm feeling like right after 95 is when you're out of here.
Yeah, like that's the merge. Yeah, that's like when the merge came.
We're hearing you in New York radio.
Yeah, that's when I get the rebirth, 1995, 96, right in there.
And one of the other things is that
The cellular phone song, the excuse boss, my cellular phone, that was a buzz in New York and it shook one part two. Remix.
Yeah.
Bobby them started playing that and at 97.
Bobby Wonder.
Bobby Trends.
Bobby Condors.
Bobby Condors. Yeah,
and Red Alert.
Yeah. Yo, original.
And David Levy, those people. Yeah. Gil Bailey. All of those people, the early people.
Rocking.
Yeah, like DJ Roy. All of those people, Dubmaster, all those people was pumping the Bounty Killer. That was the evolution and King of D sound now. Yeah. Came in the mix. Lockdown Brooklyn. Every sound system dead. King of D. When they turn on the Bounty Killer barrage. Yeah, and then Johnny Wonder hooked me up with the Fugees. Then Bobby Condor remixed the Suicide or Murder with Ja Rule the Damager. When the heat is in the house, oh my God.
That's 93.
Summer,
1996.
That's my shit right there.
So right there was the evolution of Bounty Killer in New York.
Yeah.
When I come with that Fuji shit and that Suicide Murder. And then 1998 now, when I get that fucking Mobb Deep shit, it's over. That Deadly Zone shit, War Zone it become.
Yeah, so that relationship Mobb Deep leads to the other relationships, because you're one of the first guys to really cross over with hip hop artists at that level.
Yeah, because I was watching Supercat. I was watching Shabaranx and KRS-One, and I like the whole merge of the culture.
Yeah,
and I was saying, yeah, this is exactly what we want to do. And then we see Shine It and we see Heavy D.
Yeah,
and we say yo. Exactly that I'm going to do. And then when I woke up with Johnny Wonder now, he was a hip-hop head from Brooklyn. And then he telling me about this girl named Larry Neal.
Ooh.
Them time they, I never even know about the Fugees. It was Johnny Wonder. We know about Larry Neal because she was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So we know about this nice vocal and everything. So it was Johnny Wonder telling me about that. If we get her on a hook, because we know the patois wasn't so popular. So we wanted some with hook. Are a rapper to do that American shit, and then we do the yard shit, that merch. Yeah, so they say we're gonna check Larry now. We went over there, and then that's when I met Wyclef. And then he was more excited now because he was in the reggae shit than Larry.
Yeah.
He said, what about him? We all gonna be on the track. Because it was really a Larry Neal track we went to do.
Yeah.
And Wyclef insists, no, it's gonna be a Fuji Bounty Killer track. That's how we end up with the whole three Fugees on a song. Because nobody never got that. That's the only song featured the whole feed. There's nobody got a feature from Fugees with the whole group. Okay. If you check back the history.
Yeah, this is the height of them.
It's the only feature the Fugees does that the whole three of them is on it.
Mm.
I was blessed and I never went for that. I could not pay for that. We never pay for that. The label came before that.
Mm.
It was 1996, you know, when they just dropped the score. The biggest group in the world.
Diamond.
Classic album. Yeah.
So it was just the love and the whole passion they have for dancehall. Why I got that track, you know? Because I couldn't pay them. They was on top of the world at the time. When we go there and say, we'll do collaboration. They could have run me out the place. But they said, oh, shit. If you listen to the intro, Wyclef said, Bounty Killer and who? He was so fucking electrified. That's why he sang that fucking wicked hook.
Yeah.
Everybody go hard on the track. If you listen to the track, it's one of the hardest featured
they
ever did. And it came naturally. Everybody was gassed. They know this was going to make a mark in the culture.
Yeah.
That's why we end up with a bomb. And they all appear in the video.
Top it off.
To top it off.
Yeah. Legendary. That's the power of the culture.
Legendary.
So power of the culture.
Let me ask you this about the culture. Like, Jamaican's influence has been transported all over the world. Like, I used to live in Hawaii, and it was crazy. I would see, they were listening to Bob Marley and Ziggy Marley, and white people with dreadlocks and Rastafaris. Like, I'm like, and of course in New York and Canada and Europe. But how do you feel about that? Because a lot of people have said that it's the same thing with hip hop culture. The culture has been exported, but the people that started the culture hasn't really capitalized on it. They haven't really
reaped the benefits. Well, you can't wrong people to be influenced by the culture. That's our fault. you're the one who put your culture out to the world, and then when people like it, you're going to call them culture vulture, or you're going to say they don't give you no respect. That's not their problem. You are the one to make them know that you are the curator. When things create and put in the world, I'm not the one to find the inventor. The inventor is supposed to patent his things and put it out in the world. Mm. You understand? I like good things, and I saw good things. I supposed to find out who create it. No, I'm finding out how you enjoy it. That's supposed to be my problem.
Curator,
you understand? So as you say, they are the one who's supposed to claim their culture and let it known that this is our culture. But you're not supposed to have any problem with people loving the culture. And if the culture is attractive, people will love it. And they should love it. And when people love your culture, it makes me feel like they're loving me. I don't know about nobody else. Yeah. When I see people loving Jamaican culture, I feel like they're loving a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me feel acceptable and feel loved. So I love it. I have no problem with it. I want the culture to be sold all over the world.
So I'm going back to the music for a second, because we're talking about culture and crossing cultures. Mm-hmm. 2002, you do the song with No Doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, baby.
Mm, that's my biggest
record of the career. Of Grammy the Award.
Yeah.
What was that moment like going from the young man who was singing about Born as a Sufferer?
Yo, the Super Bowl. That was electrified.
You know, hey, electrified. Let's talk about it. What was that moment like?
That was the moment that I know that, I'm a superstar now. No, that's the moment I know I'm a real superstar. I know I was a star, but I became a superstar right there. Two Moon Man MTV Award, Grammy Award, Top of the Pops in London, Super Bowl. Yeah, you're right. That's the big league right up there. Yeah, so that was really the epitome of my career in my head so far. Yeah, and I hope to do more and better. But that was the best moment, being on the Super Bowl, rocking it. Yeah, that's the nicest stage.
You got a flashback right now.
So how was that? I mean, we never interviewed anybody that's performed on the Super Bowl. What's the feeling like? That's the biggest stage in the world. 100 million people watching, 60,000 people.
No, I'm telling you what. 2002, I never know what the fuck it were.
You didn't even know what it was.
You ain't know what it was?
I know it was Super Bowl. But you know, it's big. You never know how big that shit were. I never really assess it and process it. Because tell you what, I wasn't going to go.
How did they get you back? What do they say? It's like, look, this is this moment. You need to be a part. This is the biggest song in the world.
They was doing the American Music Award.
Yeah.
I declined. They was doing some other shows. I declined. Everything me declined. Me upset me mad. Then I have this friend named Julian who works with me now. He was the one who convinced me that, there was once an opportunity like this, called once upon a time in dancehall, you had action. That year, when that song was at with Terror Fabulous and Nadine Sutherland, Terror Fabulous was on Delicious Vinyl label. Mm-hmm. That was in the 90s, like about 94, 95. And they wanted Terror Fabulous on the Super Bowl with Nadine to come sing that song.
Mm.
And Terror Fabulous declined. And then now, because Terror Fabulous career kind of fall from grace, my friend I tell me say, dog, mind bad luck, you know. The last man forget that and not do it. When they know, where, blah, blah.
Yo, the man put a big piece of information on the head start.
Yo, God, them time me no care about Super Bowl, me thinks I want football match, you know. What a match, move your blood clot, me care about a match. Wait, me didn't even know say the match of the world this. Yo, and the man convinced me and tell me one bag of sitting now and make me feel bad and say, yo, one day this could happen to me too. Super Bowl, bad luck. I swear, but my man gave me a jolly and bring up them something in my head. And we say, all right, yo, we are going to do it. Julian convinced us to do it, man. And we say, all right, we are going to do it. And we go do it and go do Top of the Pops, two things we do with them. And then now, when we take a stop, them did make me sign one piece of something. When we look, it turned 2 pages. Like, you know, when I release for.
Yeah.
But it turned 2 pages and it was a 1 page me sign. And from the next part, I'm publishing on my back.
Oh, they had publishing? Take your publishing?
Yo, the man turned this on me, boy. Where my name is Steve? Where my name? The boy turned it now 2 pages when him go overseas and publishing in it. So it become a riff now, you know. Yeah. A big war again, you know, publishing war, you know. So, you know, say a liar, California, me have to call now. I retain them $25,000 now. And one bag of sitting now. And it go to court and all these things. And I got my fair share. But it was one big something from the video to the publishing struggle. But we all good now.
That's most important.
Yeah, because everybody get their right for
so the after, after the Super Bowl, like, was it just crazy? Like, the show, your prices increased, everybody's just...
Yeah, you know, attentions and...
Attentions.
Yeah, crazy. Everything. You mentioned everything gone up. After the Super Bowl and getting the Grammy and that year, I nominated twice. Because I had my album released the year also. Ghetto Dictionary, that's my last recording album.
Yeah.
So it nominated in the reggae category, the Ghetto Dictionary. And then I was in the pop category with No Doubt. So it was 2 categories I was nominated at once. Mm. And I'm the only Jamaican artist to ever nominated in 2 categories on the same show. So I won with No Doubt in the pop category, and I lost to Lee Scratch Perry in the reggae. And if I did won 2 Grammy, no, sir. What the? That would have been too much. We can't manage to be from 2 Grammy from 1 Grammy show. No, sir. And I like Shabba, we go back to back. One gross. No, sir, that would have too much. We need no more Grammy, boy. So I just win the one with No Doubt, and then Lee Scratch Perry took the Grammy for the reggae, which was fair enough. One for one. Either way. Yeah, but that was a great moment in my career still, despite all the indifferences that we had. And from the beginning of making the song, it was a struggle still, because when they came, the producers, it was Sly and Robbie who called me and said, yo, No Doubt is in the country. They want to do a collaboration. I said, No Doubt, own him, sir. Because them time I don't know about No Doubt like that.
Yeah,
you understand? I might hear the name, but I never know the music.
Yeah,
because I'm not too into rap music like that. I listen it, but it's not my type of music. Like fancy, if you know them special artists, if they are big pop rock song, I will know it, but I won't go search them. If them burst big international and them come across, we know them over here.
Right.
So I hear the name. Never know the status. So you know you gotta look them up. Oh, a big group, cool. All right. $10,000 more.
Price going up.
Price goes up.
Yeah, a big group. 100 pound fry. A big label, Interscope and this thing. Telescope and all type of thing. I said, all right, $10,000. So I and Robbie said them said no, they only can pay 2. Me saw the bomber class. Me said 10 and them said 2. Oh, you move from 10 to 2 so quick. No, man, tell them move them blood clot. I eat them 10, man, for you can't leave Jamaican hungry. Pussy one man said, I want 10 grand a year for them 2. That's a disrespect. Hang up my phone. Slide them call back. Killer, you right, still in the boat. I saw it going, you know, you see through our music. It don't have that exposure and these opportunities. They really golden. Because back in the days when we are come, because Sly tell me when he come, and then I met music with some Stevie Wonder and some Grace Jones and some Ray Ray, some big label, them never really get in paid for profile.
Yeah.
But you get your rights, which lead up to your pension today, and then you get your recognition. Your name was mentioned, so build your track record. That's why they could come back for Sly and Robbie today, because the type of music that they made back then. So he's saying we never get a front of pay or a upfront advance, but see what it does for us. It set the track record for we. So sometimes you have to just shut your eye and just go for the pie. And them now are my mentor, are my power them, and our little pioneers that we grew around, and we look up to them. Anything them tell me is golden. So me make sure, just put my old vibes aside and say, all right, so I said, do it to us. I mean, nobody want the 2,000. I keep the 2,000 free. I would just go record it for nothing.
Yeah.
That's why God made that song brought so much success. Because I never even bother to take the 2,000. Because me deliberately come and just run them over the 2,000. Me can't say, all right, give me it now. You look like idiot. You mad? Keep that, man. Do the song, man. Yeah, we do the song for free. Instead, because they don't want to pay 10, and I don't want to take 2. So, you fuck the money shit. Sly said, let's do music, because music paying the future. And see, they pay in the future.
Yeah.
So you did that song for free?
Yeah, I never better take the 2,000, because I think it's a disrespect.
Disrespect.
And then Sly said, you know what, it's not about the money. It's about just making the music, because it lasts. Your kids come grow and live after it in the future.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened now. It's a fucking legendary classic.
Yeah, you stood on that. I'm not taking the 2, and look what it turned out.
Because once you take the 2, now that sets your price.
Yeah, I'm not a 2 guy. Nah, I'm not a $2 guy.
I'm not a 2 guy.
And then, music is bigger than the money. So you know what? Let's just do this shit for the vibe. That's why I came up with, because it never for the money. It was just for the fucking opportunity. So I said, this is an opportunity. Don't make it pass. And picture if I didn't make that pass.
Right.
Let me ask you this, because Jamaica has an interesting history with music and politics. Even going back to Bob Marley, I believe he was shot over politics. Yeah. Why is it so intertwined, and why is there so much friction when it comes to the music, politics, politicians using musicians, politicians banning certain music?
Yeah, because they want to get to the people, and then they know certain music inside the reality of life and certain things, and they don't want the people to be aware. So they like to ban music, and then they like to use artists to influence the people.
Mm.
So they use them as advantage and disadvantage. So that's how it goes. It's the power of the music.
Yeah.
That it get to the people quick. Then politicians go on the radio, the TV talk. Nobody listening, me on my phone. You understand? If killer up on the TV, everybody still so. So they love to interact music and politics.
They're using the leverage.
Especially Jamaican politicians. You know, overseas, they don't do fuck with the music or the politics. Jamaican love use the music and the politics. That's why they tried to hurt Bob Marley. Because Bob Marley was trying to unify the people. And they don't want that. Because some people might think that Bob Marley was on a specific side or trying to divide. They never know that Bob Marley was trying to unite PMP and GLP, and that's why he got shot. It's not because he was like taking side with anybody. It's because he was saying unify everybody. And they did not want that. Because they were the CIA and they were, what them name? The communists.
Yeah, for shambles.
Communist,
yeah, they thought Jamaica was going to turn
into
a communist country.
Yeah, so that's why
too close to Cuba.
Yes. So that's what they wanted. They want the friction, because they know that Bob Marley is trying to unify the people, and they don't want that. They want to get rid of the communists. And then through Bob Marley singing about the CIA and exposing them. Rat race. They don't like Bob. They think up our tech side with the communist culture. He must sing against CIA and him say communist.
Mm.
But it was coming on to there. He would have said everything. But it was really the CIA who was really bringing in the guns.
Mm.
And the communists, both sides. They was battling for Jamaica. That's all the fight and the violence become. It's a political thing.
Communists versus CIA.
Yeah, it's a political thing. Yeah. That's how gang violence started.
They're arming both sides.
That's what lead up to gangs in Jamaica today.
Okay.
Only 2 gangs start to do it from their home now. They're not doing it for CIA or for communists or for PMP or GLP. I bust my gun for my own intention now. I don't like the boy, them, I don't like the girl, them boy, they this. Because we have guns. So we start using it for our own purpose. But first it came in as that purpose.
Yeah.
CIA and communists fighting, GLP and Ray and PMP fighting each other.
It's crazy. That's very similar. Because I remember Tupac was saying that. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other.
Mm-hmm. That's what they did. Yeah, right. Then they got the gun in the country and see them and watch them kill off each other now.
Yeah.
And then can't stop the violence. Yeah, because they are not helping the people to understand life and the value of it. Because when people illiterate and people now have the understanding and people uncivilized, them now go act like me and you.
Mm.
And then make everybody come up properly and show everybody a good upbringing. So you can't expect everybody to act according. Okay. People have to go to school and learn the golden rule to not act like a fool. And it's not everybody get the opportunity to go to school to learn the golden rule and know not to act a fool. And then you want everybody to come and act according like all the people who go to school. No, The ones who don't go not gonna acacardin, and you leave them at the wayside. That's how the government works. And they are not doing nothing to help youths. There are not enough youth programs here. You understand? Disconnected youth, there is nothing for them. You have state of emergency, SOE, all these things, but you have no state of urgency trying to help the younger ones who are not into violence or close to being influenced on the wayside and try to catch them before. But as soon as they become wanted, man, they start to look for them. Them famous, no police, I look for them. But when they're done, they try and make it like these little kid who trying to sell. Nobody doing anything.
So you said that people don't have the opportunity, like children specifically don't have the opportunity. Is that
not
because
enough.
A structural, there's not enough facilities to hold it? Or, because I mean, having Jamaican parents, school was
there
like
is facility
stress.
To hold them.
Yeah.
But so. There are not enough people reaching out to them.
Okay.
And they're not doing programs to help the unfortunate and the less fortunate and the ones who are falling out of schools and all them things. We used to have a program like art program, something named Jamal class, like people who fall out of school before time could go back and catch up and all these things. We don't have most of them programs. We don't have enough sport program. Most community don't even have a community center for us to go and recreate and have a little fun. They don't even have a little park.
No vocational schools, but they
no
can learn skills.
No recreational vibes. Yeah. So it's too much disconnected people in the country, man. It's like everybody left on their own. So they act selfish and savagely. Mm. The love is weak in Jamaica right now. Yeah. Loving each other, looking out for each other. It's disconnected. Especially with COVID now, it's like you feel like you're on your own.
We hear a lot about China's influence in Africa and now China's influence in Jamaica. I think they just brought the airport.
Well, China influences all over the world still. You know? They're powerful. You know? They're ambitious. I can't even do not the Chinese. I might don't like the idea of them owning all these things, but tell you what, who wouldn't want to own if they can own all these things? You understand? And it's not their fault if they own whatever, because his people gave them the opportunity. If they saw the opportunity, who's not going to execute it? You understand? So, kudos to China. You understand? They taking over the world. I can't deny them. That's why you see Donald, they have to rush them and say, listen, come out, American! Because he saw it. You understand? So somebody have to take a stance. Yeah, but
what are your thoughts on the political climate of that, right? There could have been, I'm sure, a celebrity or businessmen and women here in Jamaica that perhaps had been given the opportunity to buy the airport, may have done it.
Yeah, but they don't want to, that's where Jamaicans stay.
Right.
I'll tell you what now, Jamaicans, few of us invest in Jamaica. Because all of these things, Jamaican, they could have buy them.
Right.
They could, just like how Butch Stewart did take over here, Jamaica, in the early 90s. That's when here Jamaica was booming. Not Caribbean airline, I wait one name. No, it named here Jamaica. It was Butch Stewart who bailed out the airline. Even when the dollar stuck up one night time, it was same Butch Stewart who bailed out the dollar again. Another billionaire Jamaican. I have hundreds of thousands of them in the country.
Right.
But they don't make those things be done issue for them. Mm. It's just like Michael Leachin and Butch Stewart and a couple of the businessmen will take up this challenge for the country. But if all the rich billionaire and millionaire who is here did really think like the country is our business too and try to help run the country, because they know the politicians are doing themselves a favor by getting what them can get and take what them can take. Right. So them not really come to uplift no country. So we can't wait for the politician. Nothing now got change. It's been over nearly how much years? Since we are a little boy. 40 years here, me, I see the politician then. And nothing to change. Mm. It's the same approach. They are not for the people.
Let me ask you this as far as the music. A lot of people that's not familiar with the culture, they think all Jamaican music is reggae, but obviously there's reggae and dancehall. And I feel like reggae now, not a lot of reggae music is coming out. It's more dancehall. Where before, like when Bob Marley, that was more reggae.
Yeah, no, but them time, there were no dancer. That was the music. That was like, all right, the music came from ska, rocksteady. Mm-hmm. It changes mood and temper. So the tempo and the mood has changed. It was something more feel like rock and roll. And then they changed it to rock steady, reggae vibes.
Wow.
And then they come to reggae. Bring it, the Bob Marley vibes. You understand? So it's just the era.
The
all of it is reggae music. Right. Jamaican music is reggae music. But you have different era of the music. It's just like rap and hip-hop. You understand? Because hip-hop and rap music is the same thing. It's just certain era described as the rap era.
Yeah.
So it come to rubber dub. It was first rubber dub before it come to dancehall. In the 80s, late 70s and early 80s, when King Jammies and John Jolaz, Volcano Sound, King Jammies Sound, Sugar Miner, with Youthman Promotion and Steely and Cleavey with Silver Ark and Bobby Digital with Heat Wave, all of those great producers and King Tubbies. It was really King Tubbies who were bringing the rubber dub style, Sly and Robbie them. Bring in the up-tempo reggae now. And that you make excuse pass with boom doo boo doo boom boo doom boo boo doo boo doo boo doom. It's still reggae. He can hear that bass line and jump shit, but it a little faster.
Yeah.
He put the dance into it, now you can't wall a girl and bubble. You understand? So it's rubber dub, and then we come in the 90s and tweak it.
Yeah.
And call it dance all over them, come in and put on it. Boom, 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 boom. It's just a tempo step up a little bit, but if you check it, it's the same thing. It's just the mood swing. So you just say like, this is the 90s reggae, and this is the 2000 reggae. Just like when you see they're doing all these trap shit fuckery now. That's not Jamaican. Even Jamaican music.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So it's just the era. So that's a 2000 part of the reggae, and this is the 90s part, and this is the 80s, and this is the 60s. So that's how I describe it. But I call Jamaican music reggae for true.
What's your favorite era?
My favorite era?
Yeah.
Well, my favorite era was when I was a boy. In the 80s, when I was learning it, my favorite era is not me, because I'm not my favorite artist.
Yeah.
I never learned this from listening to me. I learned this from listening to greats. So that was my greatest era when I was listening to man like Brigadier Jerry, Charlie Chaplin, Josie Whale, Super Cat, Yellow Man, General Trees, and Super Papa San, and Stitchy, and all the greats coming up to Shabba Ranking, Ninja Man, Super Cat, Nicodemus, those are the golden era for me.
Yeah.
Because everything I'm doing now, that's where I got inspiration from. So the era for me was what inspired me. And that was it, 70s, late 70s, 78, 79, straight to the early 80s. Those was the golden era for me.
One of the most iconic moments of the last year was your versus battle with Beanie Man. Shut down the whole world.
Can we get a round of applause for that moment, please? Listen, you talk about Corona. My parents didn't even know how to use Instagram.
They were watching.
We sat and watched that together. They haven't been so proud in so long. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, man, you're welcome. No, that was really a great moment. I like it. I enjoyed it. I was having mad fun.
Yeah, it was a lot to let up. I know y'all had issues, so how did that lead up to resolving the issues, but then also performing together? That's your own first time performing together, right?
We had resolved our issue sometime before that. Yeah. So it was so easy to do the verses, because we've been doing a couple collaborative shows a couple years before.
Yeah.
And we grew up now. We used to be against each other coming up. It does best to be for each other going up. You understand what we are going to do? Do that till we die? Nah, man. So we used to be rival, and now we are idols. So we put that aside. He's no more rival. He's just being idols. You understand?
Yeah.
And then now we learned that this became a legendary competition, and people from younger generation want to see it again.
Yeah.
It's not every clash people want to relive.
Right.
It's not everyone so interesting and so enticing and excitement, and they want to see it over and over like a movie. Clash boring that done and just done.
Yeah.
People just like to see Bounty and Beanie do it over and over every time.
Yeah.
I realized that this become a business, and then when Bounty and Beanie perform, it's more than when Beanie perform or when Bounty perform. It's always something to talk about.
Yeah.
So Bounty and Beanie do something for Bounty and Beanie, you know. Yeah. So you know this is a good thing for Bounty and Beanie. Yeah. So Bounty and Beanie have sense them to make this thing stay as it can be.
Yeah.
Make it a classic performance. And then people always see, even now we're going to Spain in October. And that's all they wanted, yeah. Bounty Killer and Beanie Man to do that versus something.
I was gonna ask you if you're going on tour.
No, we're not going on tour because through the corona and the place is just kind of easing up, little restriction all over the world.
Yeah.
But as soon as the world will reopen, hell yeah, we will be on tour.
So you had a relationship with Swizz prior. So when he made that call, was it easy?
Like, it was easy. Of course it was not. Because as I told you, me and Beanie has really reconciled and we good and then switch call. It was just perfect. All we tell him say, the issue, we have to be in the same room.
And that was
the first time.
Y'all changed the way they did
versus. We insist it has to be like that. That's the only issue I had. I told them if it's not going to be in the same room, we can't do it. Me don't know about that style. I have to look in the guy's face and tell him my mind. I can't look at a screen. I don't clash screen. I don't do that shit.
Here's the question everybody wants to know, right?
Look a man in his eyes.
When the cops walk in the room, Beanie Man is still on screen, Bounty Killer, where'd you go?
I never go, I step away off the camera. I never left the room. I step off the camera because I was mad as fuck. And what I'm about to say wouldn't be good. So you know, I make Beanie deal it up. Beanie can nice it up. You want to be that guy and be the perform it off and make it seem like Muda tell him some bum.
You want to be that guy?
Because why am I doing this? Because he had no right to come in there.
Right.
And we don't need no permit to be on a private property.
Right.
Even if it's off the curfew, we are on a private property. Yeah. And you need permit for coming here. Okay? That's the way would I tell him. When there is a curfew, it means you cannot go on the government street. It don't mean you can't be inside your business place or your private property conducting your private business.
Right.
You understand? I hype him, says camera and IG and the whole hype in Jamaica and the work. I remember the whole euphoria in the country.
Yeah.
Him just want to come get peace out and get peace. But me never like him because I never had to come on screen.
Right.
And there was a group of people with the managers and everybody who conducting the thing, just like we have a team. So you don't have to come on camera to talk about what's going on here and you saw what's going on.
Yeah.
It's Bounty and Beanie doing some recording, and you walk right into it. That was disrespectful. Yeah. Made it already with them. Wicked.
What was the reaction here after that moment that went internet? I watched it 3 times the day after. What was the reaction like here, being here?
The same reaction all over the world. It's the same vibe. It's one electrifying vibe. People kept talking about that. Even today,
I got the playlist.
Yeah, they don't miss it. It's a big thing for them. And they even watch it, even what the anniversary, Labor Day again.
Yes,
they watch it because they repost it and say anniversary and them go watch it again. 1 year after, they're still watching it.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, so that was legend. Big up the Versus, Switch and Tim.
They did a great, they changed the game with that.
Yeah, man, that was something great. And even now, after it's going to be a big thing even after the pandemic.
Yeah,
something that necessary because not everybody goes out.
Right.
And then some of the artists that they're taking to Versus, they are not even active anymore.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't even get the chance to pay to see them.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not just current artists. When they go back for the Bobby Brown now and the Keith Sweat, what be, and it's crazy. And they never know who you're going to see in Versus.
That's right.
You understand? It can be Soulja Boy and Bobo. And then it can be Lox and Dipset. You just never know.
Who you got, Lox and Dipset?
But you know, the locks are murderer, man. Dipset can't mess with the locks. No disrespect.
So not 1-4
thing. Dipset is a hot group, but not like the locks. Come on, man. And he's not no biggie. Do that. They know. Jada Kiss is a dead Kiss. They know that. Kiss are dead. They can't mess with Jada. Nobody over there can mess with Jada Kiss. For me.
That's a fact.
As a slaughterer, he's a killer. And I know he's one. No.
Killers respect killers.
No, they're two good groups.
Yeah, but if you're going
to say who's going to like have the edge, it has to be the Lux. Yeah, the Lux.
That's a fact. Let me ask you this. As far as Afrobeats is real big right now. And I hear a lot of the influence from Jamaica, you know, in the Afrobeat. What's your thoughts on Afrobeats?
It's exceptional. I love it. And I'm so happy for Africa. Africa love every music. And then Africa finally got an international sound across.
Yeah.
So they finally has their identity musically.
Yeah.
just like how when you hear reggae music or when you hear hip hop, you know it's New York, and when you hear reggae, you know it's Jamaica. Now when you hear Afrobeat, you just know that's Afro. Yeah. And I love it. Yeah. I don't know about nobody, but Afrobeat is sweet to me.
Yeah.
And I even have an Afrobeat song coming on my new album.
Well, I was gonna ask you about your new
that's
album.
What's next. Yeah, I got an Afrobeat. Imagine what's next.
Talk about that. Talk about the new music that you have coming.
Yeah, well my new album called King of Kingston. It's close to complete. But I have so much idea because it's 18 years since I've done an album, so.
18 years?
Yeah, you know, when you have so many space in your head now and so much musical thoughts and development, it's hard to just make an album easy, the first one. After this one, maybe I can just make two more easy now, but the amount of thing I need to be done from 18 years ago musically, the amount of people that I should have collaborated with.
That's what I want.
It's so deep.
You're the king of reggae collaboration. So who is somebody that you haven't worked with yet that is on the list like, I need to get them on this album?
Barry's album.
Barry's him.
Yeah, that's one that's on the list. That
that's my dad's favorite.
Barry's, he's the maestro, the boss.
Yeah,
he's the king of love of rock. Yo, so I've been very sunny to be grand. Yeah, but I got some good collaboration.
I always wonder why, like my favorite artist is Nas.
And Nas, my artist.
He takes so long to make music. It frustrates me sometimes.
You don't rush. He's a perfectionist.
But I always wonder why great musicians take so, like you say, you 18 years, like, it's just like
people can't believe it.
Why?
People, I never took 18 years. I just
even like Kendrick Lamar, that long, but a lot of great artists.
On hiatus.
Why? It's really why Junior gonna even come and gas me up and him and Robert Livingston, those two men always that tell me about album. And then since my visa has been canceled 10 years ago, that's what I really kill my vibes.
To come to America?
I can't go to America. I haven't been there 10 years now. I don't even know why they canceled the visa.
Why?
I only have a little weed charge. It couldn't be no weed charge because I had a weed charge in 1997. And then when I came back to Jamaica, I went to the embassy. And they canceled the visa that I had and they gave me something in waiver. So they waived that shit. And I've been traveling on a waiver since 1997 up to 2010, 13 years.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, the wave does not waving anymore. I don't know what's going on. Because I haven't done anything else. As I said, it was one week charge and I got a waiver. And I've been traveling on it. Then all of a sudden, the visa does cancel. And they're saying the week charge.
So you could travel just not to America?
Yeah.
We need to Canada,
not to the UK either.
Oh, wow.
I can't go to Europe. That's the three biggest markets.
Yeah, they're fucking up my shit. That's why I am too making certain music, because I like to go tour. I like to go look in the people's face. I like to go bring the music to the people. And I never know about streaming and all these things, and online market, physical copy of soul.
Yeah, that's
a new thing now I have to adjust. Yeah. And get into this online market shit. Yeah. So that's why I'm just making the album.
But streaming now, it makes it worldwide.
Yeah,
streaming. Get your music.
Streaming, yeah.
Yeah, so physically you can't go there, but streaming take you there. So make it work.
Well, we need to see you in the States.
We got a fun campaign.
Yeah, yo, listen, what camera? Right in this camera. Listen, Nicole, make a call.
Yeah.
We need Bounty Killer in the States, preferably in New York City.
Brooklyn. We need him in
Brooklyn, yeah? Clap it up for that. Clap it up for that. Yeah, we need him in Brooklyn. He needs his own float.
Yeah.
In the parade.
Thanks.
Oh, we need him in the Labor Day parade.
We need him in the Labor Day parade.
No, but you know that's my thing. I'm always on it.
The man of the people.
The Labor Day parade?
I miss that. You forget? You never used to see me on the parade? How old are you?
37.
At 97 truck, that's our truck.
They need you
man,
back.
Man, elephant,
it.
Man.
Elephant, man.
Baby Sham, all of us.
We got to
keep rich, everybody. Yeah.
We got to make a call.
Eastern Parkway, it's not the same.
Not the same. No, it's not the same, but we're going to make a call. We got to make a call.
We got to get them back.
That's the favorite in New York.
We're going to create a hashtag for it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're going to create a hashtag for it.
Nah. But I'll build there soon. I know. I'll soon get there.
But nah, I appreciate you,
Joe
brother,
Biden
man.
Working on it. This let him know, Joe.
This is definitely very enjoyable. What would you like to leave the people with, other than, I know you got the album coming out, anything else that you're working on or want to let the people know, be aware of?
Oh, well, the most interesting thing is really my album, getting out the album right now. And and I'm about to sign a new publishing deal with Concord Publishing, and I'm about to get some more dancehall in the soul of the people, because there's a competition now. They come to trap all and confusing the people in the world if this is the new sound of Jamaica, and it is not.
Is trap music in Jamaica?
Yeah, you got some local trappers. No problem with it, but it's not the new sound of Jamaica. It's just a sound that Jamaican plays.
It's making now.
You understand? That's how I want them to tell people. Don't tell, this can't be no new sound. It's an old sound from overseas that you playing with. This can't be our new sound, some sound that came from some other place. No. All our sounds are our creative sound, is original.
Yeah.
You understand? So they playing with it in the country, but we have the real family. Dancehall. And that's what the people know, and that's what they want. Songs. Rhythms like Diwali, you understand?
Mm.
Yeah. So,
who's some of the artists that you like that's coming up, younger artists?
Oh, the younger ones. You got so many great young artists. My favorite young artist them now is really Dexter Dap, Coffee, Protégé, Chronix, Massica, And even more recent now, you got one named Yaska. Younger ones, Nation Boss and Tenty. Couple little younger youth, we are the good.
Mm.
But there's so many young ones, but those are my little pick for now, so far. But there are always talents coming up in Jamaica. And everybody in Jamaica have music in their soul, they just don't discover it as yet.
Yeah.
So you never know. All the guy we used to walk in here selling tomorrow, we're gonna see you on the stage yelling.
Usain Bolt, are you gonna be working with him? He said that he was trying to work with a lot of artists and do like a DJ.
Well, Usain Bolt is my virgin and he's a fan of mine and he's getting into the music.
Yeah, I like it.
So who to tell? And then he's working with Dave Kelly, one of my legendary producers.
Yep.
So you never can tell.
That's Madhouse, right?
Yeah. Who to tell? I'm willing to be a part of any project he's putting out, because I'm a supporter of him. And I like the fact that he's supporting that music too.
Yeah.
And he's not doing music to make shit. He's just making music music. So I'm excited to see him in music.
Yeah, that's passion.
A lot of people try to bash him and all that, but why are you gonna bash him?
Yeah,
it's too important.
And then, no, he's a music lover.
Yeah.
He is a music guy. I met UCN as a young sprinter when he was just coming up at the club, at the asylum. That's where we became familiar with each other, in parties. And he was always on the dance floor doing the dances, that's why you see him always doing dance. And that's him naturally.
Yeah.
So he's not putting on any front or going like, oh, I come on, take up music for people, see him. No, he loves music. He's one of the biggest music supporters. He's a big Gaza fan. Remember, everybody knows same support vibes, Cartel to the end and all these things. You understand? And he's a big fan of Bounty Killer too. He's a big fan of everybody on True Cartel and favorite. You understand? And Jamaican, I know how to have a favorite and favorites. I'm a favorite of the favorites. I'm Cartel fiance, I'm more than your artist. And you can't bounty as your artist and be as your artist. Yeah. You have to pick a side. That's how Jamaican do artists in
It's like Jay-Z and
Jamaican say, oh, you feel have Cartel and I'm of as your artist. Because they are great artists.
Right.
If no man say you have to take a side, it's not politics. Music and politics.
It is.
Jamaican. Politics in the music.
Nah, this is very enjoyable, brother. Thank you, man. Thank you for your hospitality.
You're welcome.
Like I said, man, it's always an honor when we get to speak to legends.
Absolutely.
And this is right up there with, you know,
anybody. It's going to be a legendary moment.
This is the greatest moment.
10 years after, when the kids look at it.
Yeah, that's absolutely a fact. Archived.
Exactly.
Archived. In history. Troy, anything you want to say?
I want to say J, A, M, Jamaica.
Bullet, kaboom!
Jamaicans live up, yeah. All right, yo, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all also have Proud to Pay program. And shout out to everybody that is a Tier 5 member there. They have access to EYL University, the number one school for everything in the business world. So shout out to all the earners, over the 9,000 of y'all. We love y'all dearly. And shout out to the entire merch team. Oh, yeah. Shout out to the entire production team. This is our first outdoor interview. It was a crazy one. We love y'all. Y'all know how we play. Love is love.
Yeah. Shout out to everybody. Shout out to the whole team. Shout out to my brother Alex. Shout out to Safari for making this happen. And shout out to Jamaica, man. It's been nothing but love. We definitely gonna come back here, do some events here. And, you know, it's all love. So thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.